recording.
All right. So episode 11 of season 12, we are getting down to the end of season 12. And on the downside, that means we're running out of podcasts for the spring season. On the upside, that means we're rapidly morphing into convention season as the summer gets here. And to that end, we've got some conventioneers here with us tonight talking that we're going to focus mainly on Buckeye Game Fest and Origins. We'll probably talk about a couple other conventions, but if we're talking BGF and Origins, we're dragging Gary into this. So Aardwolf is here.
How's it going?
Glad you're able to make it. And
this time, yes.
Well, I'm glad for any time that you're here. So,
well, that's good because I'm here.
And the first time joining us here on the podcast is another guy who's been a part of our Origins crew for a couple of years now and frequently makes cameo appearances at Buckeye Game Fest. Our buddy Lee is here. Lee, how are you?
Good evening.
And so Gary and Lee have both, Gary started out just slinging dice with us at Origins for a couple of years before he finally volunteered to start GMing, and we haven't let him get away yet.
Yeah, they put me to work and I can't say no. So here we are, it's 10 years later.
and somewhere in there, you managed to drag Lee into all of this also. I think
that's true too.
Him into it. I don't think he volunteered.
I think Frank Chadwick talked Lee into it when we said we were going to run the Third World War, actually, a few years ago. Yeah,
but we did Second Front before that.
That's true. We did Second Front. So still, I mean, Frank was involved, right? Sort of, yes. Kind of.
I got offered a chance to play some more Europa.
There you go. Stopped. And you can't, Lee, just like I can't say no to more work, Lee can't say no to more Europa.
Indeed. Or Starfleet battles.
Or Starfleet battles. That's fine too. Where there might be an impromptu Starfleet battles game that breaks out at Origins this year. We'll see. Or Buckeye Game Fest, or both. Either one is possible.
The pickup game of Starfleet battles has been threatened several years at Origins, and it has yet to actually happen.
That's true. Just be glad it's not a pickup game of Federation and Empire, or we'll take the whole area over and occupy it for the entire week.
And the whole weekend, yeah.
And the weekend. And the following week, until the hotel security throws us out.
Pretty much. So as we are recording this, BGF is a little bit in the future. As folks are listening to it, the War Room's going to open up in like 3 days, but there is still time. If you are in commuting distance of Columbus and want to come join Buckeye Game Fest, there is still time to come join us for, you probably wouldn't be able to get there for the War Room because you'd have had to arrange time off from work to be there for like Monday through Wednesday or whatever. But for Friday, Saturday, for sure, plenty of time to come join the War Room. And the War Room is sort of its own separate room at Buckeye Game Fest, organized and governed by the convention as a whole. But it's nice that, you know, that there's this set aside room where you can leave some monster games up, where the wargamers know that they can congregate and sort of have a definitive home. And Gary, I know when I lived in Columbus and I first started going to BGF, and actually I found the t-shirt when I was cleaning the closet out the other day. I was at like BGF 8 back in 2006 or something like that. And so, you know, I was at several of them back then in the mid-aughts or whatever the hell we're calling that decade. There wasn't a separate war room. It was just one giant room full of games. When did the war room become its own thing?
This will be my like sixth or seventh BGF, I want to say, something like that. And it has had its own room the entire time I've been going. I can tell you that. But back when it was at one of the older locations, I think there was just one room. At one point, there were two war rooms. There was like right across the hall from each other, down the hall from the big game room. There were two separate war rooms, and both of them were filled with OCS people.
Oh, wow. Lee, were you ever at a pre-war room Buckeye Game Fest?
I might have been. I was in CABS, which started BGF starting from just before 2000. So I probably went to a couple of them, and then I bailed on CABS. I think I went to a war room when they were still at the Radisson near here, near my house.
Yeah, up on the north side of town.
Yeah, one of the earlier ones of those, but I couldn't tell you when that was.
Yeah, there was 06, 07, 08 timeframe. I know I made the ones in 06 and 07. I was actually there. That was back when Bayonet Games was still a thing. And I was actually there with a vendor table. And it's not like, you know, Origins where you've got a separate vendor room. There's like three or four tables set up around the edges of you know, what was then, like Gary said, just one giant room full of people playing games. So I just put a sign on the table that said, I'm the guy in the hockey jersey. And I was the only guy running around in a Carolina Hurricanes jersey. So it was pretty easy to find me.
Everybody else said, who?
Yeah, pretty much. I do remember Bruce giving me some grief one time when he stopped in the middle of the auction and looked at me. He goes, a Carolina Hurricanes jersey. And this was right after they'd won the Stanley Cup. And
And Brant still hasn't stopped talking about it, so here we are.
that's only partially true. But Bruce stopped the middle of whatever he was doing, and Bruce is a Blue Jackets fan, not a diehard hardcore one, but he is a Blue Jackets fan.
Are there diehard hardcore Blue Jackets fans?
Yes, I play D&D with them.
Okay, fair enough.
I was giving them credit for some. I don't know, but I was, you know, for their
sake. Lee plays D&D with all of them, I believe. Probably.
But I pointed out to Bruce, you know, hey, look, you guys make the playoffs and then come, you know, have a word with me at some point. So, because I don't think the Blue Jackets had up to that point. But BGF has always been, first and foremost, it's a game playing convention. Like, game conventions. This isn't a shopping convention. There's no costume contest. There's no scavenger hunt. There's no bunch of extra stuff. Pretty much everything they do revolves around putting a game on a table and playing something, right?
Yeah. So there are probably six or eight vendors at Buckeye Game Fest at this point. And, you know, for Wargamers, there will be one, maybe two. I don't think Enterprise Games will be there this year. I haven't heard from Don. I think the new time slot for or calendar slot for BGF does not work for him. But Blue Panther should be there, correct?
Yes. Blue Panther's planning to be there, which means that they're bringing along something from all of the different publishers for whom they print. Catastrophe, Holland Spiel, White Dog, Historical Game Company, all those folks.
Yeah, I have some money set aside to buy some stuff from Blue Panther. So
yeah.
Otherwise, maybe you'll buy some dice or something. I don't know, Dice Tower is possible. Last year, there was some folks there with dice towers, relatively compact dice towers at that. So, but yeah, it's not a Vendy convention, right? You're not going to go and drop $1,000 on in the vendor room at Buckeye Game. Well, you could, but you'd be nuts. You'd probably clean the place out.
Yeah, I was going to say, you just left with someone's entire booth.
Yeah, it makes it easier for them to transport it home, I suppose.
Including the tables.
Yeah.
So, well, it's...
There's also no... there's no, like, auction or flea market or anything like that anymore. The last couple of years, they've done that weird thing where you, like, rent a table for a 30-minute slot or an hour slot or whatever it is, and you basically... You have that hour, and you go and you could vend off that table. And I don't know, I didn't meticulously monitor it, but there was nothing that was relevant to me on those tables at any point. So that seems a weird and inefficient way to do, you know, to do that. But they may well have done the calculus on running like a silent auction or a flea market or whatever and decided it was just too much effort. Too much work and manpower allocated to that as opposed to doing the other stuff that needs to happen to make the convention happen at all.
Yeah.
But there's a raffle. There's a huge raffle.
Yeah, the raffle's pretty big. For some reason, I thought we did have that they were bringing back sort of the overly structured flea market again this year.
Oh, well, that'd be cool. I hadn't heard that. But if they do that, I'd be delighted because typically... You know, yeah, it's mostly general board games, but there's that one person that always brings their old S&T magazines and wants $5 a piece for them. I cleaned up last time there was a flea market. I cleaned up on that stuff.
Yeah, I remembered seeing something about it. I thought online, like on the Facebook page or something like that, that there was something about it. But I could be mistaken. Of course, I'm sitting in front of a computer, so I'm stalling for time while I go look for this.
Right.
But they do, in fact, have one in there. Lee, I understand you're not actually going to be sort of camped out with us at BGF the entire time this time around, are you?
Afraid not. Work is interfering yet again. I'll be there full-time one day and part-time 3 days. 3 days? Yeah, 3 days.
Well, at least part-time, you know, it's better than no time.
Yes.
So that is good.
That's exactly what Lee said when I made fun of him for working.
Yeah.
So, well, hey, it's better than nothing, right?
Yep.
So there is a thing on the BGF Facebook discussion area that is an official post from the convention. They're calling it the consignment store, and it will be Saturday morning from 9 to noon. So it's a chance for you to you get your badge, and there's a couple of waves. It's basically you've got an hour to try and sell your stuff, and they're going to do it in three different waves, and so you get a consignment store seller ticket to set your stuff up, and you've got to pay a small fee to sell your stuff, but it's it's a flea market, right? I mean, that's really what we're doing. So, but you don't have to sit there. They have somebody who's going to kind of put all the games on a table, babysit them. They'll collect the cash off of the prices that you've set, and they'll hook you up with it afterwards. So that seems to be how they're doing it. If you want more info, go read the information on their Facebook page.
Yeah, or just show up and we'll tell you what to do. It'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll work too. BGF and Origins are both in the Columbus Convention Center. BGF just takes up a way much smaller piece of it.
Considerably. So to be more specific, the Origins takes up the Convention Center and the adjacent connected Hyatt Regency and sometimes spills over into additional attached facilities as well. Where Buckeye Game Fest is kind of one wing of one floor and several rooms in the Hyatt. So it's, you know, less folks get the wrong. I think what they drew like 300 or 400 people last year or something like that.
Somewhere right around there. Yeah. It was a little smaller than I thought it was just walking around looking at. It looks probably bigger than it actually is. Maybe just the room configurations. I really thought it was closer to like 650 or 700. But when they published their official numbers, it was right around 500. Maybe I think it was just a little under.
Okay. Something like that. Right. But still, they took it hard. They got hit hard in that post-COVID year. They took it in the shorts. It was a very difficult year. And I think that year they drew about 250, which is really not bad, right? But it is, you know, it's not a particularly cheap site either. So, yeah,
but, you know, it's those smaller, almost commuter heavy conventions, I think, that really got smacked around a bit by COVID because they weren't. First of all, the facilities costs are probably an outsized bit of their annual budget for running those conventions. And they're stuck with the whims of the local authorities as to whatever the mitigation measures of the week happened to be. And they were powerless to really do anything about it. If somebody decided everybody put masks back on, or you didn't have a convention.
Right. It's like a week before the convention, you know, in some cases.
Yeah, exactly. And that's not to take a pro or anti-mask stand. I'm not trying to get into the medical advice business at all, other than to note that when guidelines changed, the conventions had to change with them. They had no option other than to change with them or not happen.
Or cancel.
And it's tough to get attendees to commit one way or the other when they've all got their own personal ideas of what level of comfort they have with those different mitigation measures and having them constantly change, regardless of what your personal preference is, you want some predictability in what they are. And I think that really screwed up a lot of the smaller local conventions.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, it hosed Origins too, to be fair. Yes. So it wasn't just those. There's just more of those.
Yes. But I think Origins was a little more resilient given the size and scope of it compared to a lot of those smaller ones.
I mean, yeah, that's probably true, but also remember the absolute dog fucking that Gamma did that year regarding their online events track too. So it's not like, you know, they may have had an advantage in terms of size and resources, and they have a disadvantage in the sense of bungling management.
Yeah, well,
they can't tie their own shoes.
Yeah. And not just that, but the visibility of the bungling.
It happens every year. We laugh. We're still going, folks. It's a great event, but God damn it, we make fun of them and laugh about it every year.
Yeah, and but when something as large and prominent as Origin screws up, everybody hears about it. When the smaller local, you know, two guys in a pickup truck con ends up having a problem that only affects 60 people that all live within, you know, walking distance of the convention, nobody cares.
That's so true.
I think that has an outsized impact on it all. So you know, look, we're talking a bunch about BGF right now, and I do think that because we're going to be there, you know, that's why it's sort of sticking out. One of the things that came up actually on your live stream the other day is something that I thought we might take a slight left turn into to address, and I'm sure Lee's going to have some thoughts on this as well. Somebody had brought up the idea of, hey, someone should, like, for people that have never been to a convention, like, what all is entailed in going to a convention? Like, you buy a badge and show up, and then what? And while every convention is going to have its own nuances and run slightly differently, you know, you've got 35, 40 of them under your belt over the last however many years, probably more than that. I may be underselling.
That's almost Origins alone, to be honest. Yeah. It's been a long time. Yeah, I'm coming up on, I've missed a couple, but I will have been going to Origins for 30 years come 2025. So that means I've been to 20. This will be my 28th.
Yeah.
So that's just Origins. I mean, to be honest, it's not like I go to Gen Con every year, too. Right. So, you know, it's a huge percentage of my convention experiences with Origins, let's put it that way.
Yeah, but you've also got some Winterfest in there, Compass Con, Buckeye Game Fest. Lee, you've got obviously Origins and BGF. What else do you have for conventions under your belt?
I have been to every Origins since Philadelphia, which was 95.
That was my first as well.
Okay.
It was 95.
I didn't make it to, yeah, there's one I almost missed, but I made it to like Sunday afternoon, so that counts.
Was that the weird October post-COVID Origins?
No, it was the year my brother-in-law wanted to get married in Wyoming.
Oh, geez.
On that weekend, or the week right before.
The bastard. What's the matter with him?
Yeah. Well, I got to see some pretty scenery anyway. Well, I've been to every Winterfest, and that's been 26,
I think. I think this was 26.
Yeah. And I've been to probably half that many CapCons, which was the Ohio State University's convention from about early 80s through, I think it finally shut down sometime before 2000, maybe a little after that.
It wouldn't have been much after that because I got to Ohio State in 04 and it was gone.
Okay.
It was there when I was there the first time in 91 or whatever that was. I could tell you that. I didn't go to it, but I'm aware that it occurred. I'm not sure why I didn't go to it. I was dumb. Why did I not go to it when I had the chance? It was right at the Ohio Union, as I recall. And I could just walk there and play games, and I just didn't. I just kind of distracted at the time.
Pull it off.
Yeah, it was well, when they tore the Union down, it went away and never really
came. Yeah, and it hasn't. Yeah, that's right.
I'm not even sure the Game Club has come back. I'm sure it has. But,
The Game Club got relocated, actually, to my knowledge. The Game Club was happening. I think I went to it once when I went back to Ohio State in about 2010.
Yeah, there are a lot fewer all alums going to it, I guess.
That's possible.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Lee.
I've been to a handful of Con on the Cob, which is an Akron, Cleveland area, mm-hmm. mostly role-playing con.
Yeah, I got to get to that since it's literally 10 minutes from here. It's about 20 minutes, but still, it's like 20 minutes from here.
Yeah, it was like half an hour from my in-laws, and they didn't care that I wasn't there. I left their grandkids with them and disappeared for a Saturday.
Yeah.
And what time of the year is Con on the Cob?
Mid-October.
Oh, that's good timing. Not really that good of timing for me this particular year, but you know, normally it's going to be good timing.
Yeah.
I got a couple of smaller conventions out in California in the mid 90s when I was living out there, mostly role playing or back then collectible card stuff was all the rage, but I was there more for the role playing stuff.
I'm sorry, I'm breaking out in a sudden rash.
Uh-oh. I will admit to having played some collectible card stuff way back in the day, but bailed on it pretty quickly.
To my eternal shame, I am one of the people that brought collectible card games back to Ohio.
Yeah,
it's all your from that Gen Con at which they were, or at which Magic the Gathering started to make a really, really big splash. Let me put it that way.
Oh, it was 93 or 94.
Yeah, whatever it was, I don't care.
Yeah, because by the summer of 94, it was exploding. But then once I moved back to the East Coast, like I didn't touch a game convention until I had moved to Columbus and had Origins in my backyard. And between Origins and Buckeye Game Fest and Mace and our Fall Assembly down here and Gamma Expo is sort of kind of a convention, but not really.
Not really.
It's got convention like things about it, but it's not truly a convention.
Large amounts of people and unpleasant body odors are really the only correspondence, and incompetent management are really the only correspondences between it and Origins, to be honest. So for those who don't know, the Gamma Trade Show is exactly that. It is a trade show. It is not open to the general public. You've got to be a Gamma member or a retailer or a publisher or something, or sometimes press. Then you're in one of those categories, right? Yeah. And it's Gamma's it's a trade show. It's where the publishers will try to sell the retailers on whatever fancy new thing they have, among other things. I mean, I'm kind of boiling it down there, but that's the gist of it.
that's a big chunk of the events there. But there's a whole lot of convention business that gets handled there. A lot of event folks there will make arrangements with publishers and retailers and dealers and distributors to be involved. There's also a lot of connections there between publishers and manufacturers, the actual people that run the factories. There's more of those folks there than you realize.
The Studio Twos of the world too, sort of middlemen operating between design houses and warehouse.
Yeah, they're sort of distributors with a bit of a retail bent to them. Those folks are also definitely there. Look, you get that many gamers in one place and games are going to break out. And so
that's true.
The game nights there do get a lot of play. And honestly, this past year at Gamma Expo, I think I actually played more games than the last three or four Origins combined. Now,
man, you're working at Origins, working your fat old ass off. So, you know, that you don't get much gameplay in at Origins is maybe not a surprise because you're facilitating everybody else having fun, for which the entire population thanks you.
Yeah, indeed. Well, the entire population of six that actually know what I'm doing there, maybe. So
that's true. Hey, why is that guy in the hockey jersey hanging around again? I'm going to call convention center security. I think he's a panhandler.
Sometimes I probably look like one, actually.
No, not until at least Sunday morning, fortunately. Yeah. And unlike a thankfully dwindling number of convention attendees, Brant actually does take a shower and use deodorant. I can attest.
Yeah. Well, Brant's also not sleeping in his car to make ends meet.
Or the bushes out in front of the convention center, which we actually attempted to do one year. It did not go well. We that lasted about 20 minutes and we said, fuck this. We're going to go find somebody we know and pay them $20 to crash on their floor. And that's what we did.
The one time I pulled an all nighter at Origins, there was a guy sleeping in the corner of the room, of the game room.
Was it a famous designer?
It was not as famous, but it was a developer.
Okay. I think I might know who you're talking about, and that person may have had a reputation for doing that.
Yeah, maybe. Great.
That's pretty rare these days. Not that you never see anybody dozing on a sofa in the hotel lobby, because that does happen. But it's, you know, it's not the 80s anymore. It's pretty rare, I think, at Origins nowadays to encounter that gamerific aroma that conventions have become known for. That's not unknown. It happens, but it's an uncommon occurrence at Origins these days.
Going back to sort of where this was trying to steer the ship a little bit, and back on yours and Dan's show here.
Chaos.
Yes. If I'm a brand new convention attendee who has no idea what I'm doing, like you need some form of life. Like if you're in commuting distance to whatever convention it is, no problem. Like you're sleeping in your own bed. Otherwise, you're going to need to find a hotel room. But that's not really any functionally different than finding a hotel room if you're going to a concert out of town, or if you're, you know, going to a buddy's wedding. Like you still got to find a hotel room. Like we don't need to explain to people you got to go find a hotel room.
That's true. But basically all the convention. All the hotels that are near the convention center are already sold out, and or the rates are the blocks are definitely sold out, and the room rates are astronomical.
So something like Origins, absolutely. But if somebody's going to head out west and head to Kublai Khan, or if somebody's going down.
Oh, that's different.
For Liberty Con, and they decide, hey, Steve Jackson does Liberty Con. You know, he's a major presence there. I dig Steve Jackson stuff, so I'm going to go to Liberty Con. Like the convention will probably have an associated hotel with a room block that's got some ideally cheaper rates as a part of that block, but you're not obligated to be in that block of hotel rooms. Find somewhere to stay that's easy enough to get to the facility where the convention takes place. Mm-hmm. And look, it's getting a hotel room. It's no big deal. You're going to need to register for a bag.
It's a skill you will need as a functioning adult sooner or later.
One would hope. Yes. somewhere in there, you're going to have to get a badge. You're going to have to pay the entry fee to get into the convention. Many conventions, will allow you to just walk up and buy a badge and off you go. There are some conventions that do sell out.
Correct. SD HistCon, for example, sells out every year.
SD Hist sells out. Circle DC has sold out both of the 2 years that it's been in operation. There are some smaller ones that will sell out. And one of the considerations there, quite frankly, is the space in the room. Like, the fire marshal has put a capacity limit. If you are using a banquet room that, you know, maxes out at 100, they're not selling 150 tickets. No, not all 100 people are going to be in there at once, but you got to be able to plan for that eventuality. So if you're maxed out on how many people are allowed to be in the building or in the room or wherever it is you're holding this thing, it's possible the convention could sell out ahead of time. So look into buying your badge ahead of time if you can. The other advantage to buying the badge ahead of time comes back to the other piece of things, and that is being able to arrange something to play ahead of time. Now, there are a lot of conventions, and Gary and I have talked about this a bit, and Lee is as guilty of it as anybody. You know the people that are going to the convention, so you make arrangements for what you're going to play ahead of time before you ever get there. And that's fine if you know people there, but if you don't, then you're looking for whatever their registration system happens to be in order to sign up for some of those games. Tabletop.events has gotten to be pretty popular over the last, I don't know, 10 years, 8 years, however long it's been around. It hasn't been 10. It's probably been 7 or 8 because they were around for a couple of years pre-pandemic. I think it's Warhorn, I think, is the system that a lot of RPG events will use for their signups. Some folks just use Eventbrite. Some folks have their own custom registration system built. I know Mace for a long time used Ogre, the online game registration and event something. They actually made an acronym out of it all. But they're all essentially the same thing. They will list a game and a time and a duration and a number of seats, and you go ahead and sign up and get your ticket for that event. And so at, you know, Friday at 10 a.m., you're going to go sit down, and that's the game you're going to go sit down and play. They'll have locations and all that information as a part of the sign up, so you know where to go. But that's what you're going to look to do, and that will get you into a scheduled game event to sit down and play something. Ideally, the people there will have notified you ahead of time if you already need to know how to play the game or if they're going to teach the game. It's a good idea to find out if you're not clear, because what you don't want is you don't want to sit down and be the one guy who needs the game taught to him at a table of three other people expecting to like pick up and go because they already know how to play. Conversely, you don't want to be the one guy who already knows how to play and was sitting down expecting to start slinging dice and have to sit through a half an hour of teaching people if you can avoid it. So check those things ahead of time.
This is one of the downsides of being a small and insular hobby like wargaming, right? Because this kind of thing tends to happen at wargaming events. And probably the most effective circumvention of that phenomenon that I've seen is the way John Krantz tends to do it for Consum World Expo in Tempe, which is the ultimate wargamers destination, and you better have the ultimate wargamers wallet to go there. And now Compass Expo, where he provides a sign up list, and you could say, I want to play these three games, and here's my email address, and people will email you. So that has worked well until this year when some trolls got a hold of that list and started spamming everybody with offers to buy the Compass Games guest list, hilariously. Which was literally where they got the information.
Funny.
But Tabletop Events seems to be the go-to registration platform now for really even big, from very small conventions to enormous conventions like Origins. Is Gen Con using Tabletop Events?
I don't know.
Or do they have their own thing? Historically, they've had their own thing, but it's been ages since I've been there.
Yeah, ditto. You've been more recently than I have. So,
really? Oh, it's been a long time. It's been last time I was there, it was still in Milwaukee.
Okay, then I've been more recently than you. The last time I was there was 2007. So
pretty sure it was out of Milwaukee at that point. It's been out of Milwaukee for at least 20 years.
No, all last three times I went, it was in Indianapolis. And it was, I was driving over from Columbus.
Okay. I boycotted it when they moved to Indianapolis. That's of course nonsense. I just haven't been there. So
yeah, two of those were day trips actually. So.
The only time from Columbus, that's day very day trippable. That's a 2 hour drive.
Oh yeah,
Lee, you had something
back at midnight.
The only time I went to Gen Con, I registered for my events by filling out a piece of paper that was printed in Dragon magazine.
I remember that. Do you remember the or did somebody else deal with it for you? The Gen Con hotel reservation circus. where you'd have to list 10 hotels in order of preference, and they would assign you to a random one that may or may not have been on your 10 that you listed. And a big part of the motivation of Gen Con moving from Milwaukee to Indianapolis was Indianapolis had a lot more hotel rooms and they weren't going to have to deal with this. And now Gen Con has grown so much that they have to do this again. It's nonsense. And it has been a big part of the reason that has kept me away from Gen Con is I just don't want to deal with that hassle. And I frankly am overcommitted anyway. So it's easy for me to say no to another convention.
Yeah. Gen Con appears to be using their own. If they're using something like a tabletop.events, they've got it rebranded as its own Gen Con thing, which they can afford to have somebody do for them.
Well, you'll know if it's got tabletop events on the back end by the fact that when the registration opens, does it instantly crash due to the intentional self DDoS attack that they did? Because if so, then yeah, that's probably tabletop events.
So for folks that are attending conventions where the signups are open and public like that, like in Origins, it's simply a matter of trying to find your events and pick and choose and register for them. If you're going to a smaller local convention that's got 150, 200 people, even if they are using tabletop.events or Warhorn or some other similar online registration system, it's not going to be that much to leaf through it and find what you're looking for. For something like Origins that's got 5,000 events, yes, you're going to need to search and filter some stuff. And when event registration goes live, as Gary joked, it's a bit of a self-inflicted DDoS attack. It's kind of like the day any tickets go on sale for Taylor Swift, right? You know, the whole world's trying to get in there all at once. And so
I have never experienced that phenomenon, Brant, but that's
I've got friends that have worked for Ticketmaster and a cousin that works for them. So I've heard the horror stories. But you're trying to make arrangements for scheduling those games. And ultimately the majority of the game conventions, like that's the key thing you're doing is you're going there to play games or participate in them somehow. Many conventions will have other things around them, whether it's a miniatures painting contest or a costume contest or a scavenger hunt or an exhibit hall or a music program or a lecture track or an education track or something else going on the side somewhere. Those are all there to sort of support the overall audience that's there as a part of the games. Gen Con still has a film festival. Origins has kind of come and gone.
They've still got the what is it really that you go to every year?
The Smithy Awards.
They still do that, which is not really a film festival. I don't know. They had like an anime thing sometime in the last couple of years. I don't know. I've never been in there.
Yeah.
But
they've had the foam boffer weapons combat stuff going on over the years at Origins.
Yeah, that's a relatively recent appearance, like last 6 or 7 years, maybe. But it seems to be popular and those folks keep coming back. I don't know. I don't remember offhand whether it was Amptguard or Dagger here or whoever it was that was there the last several years. I think it was Amptguard, actually, thinking about it.
Been there more than the others. That doesn't mean the others weren't around. Yeah. Like TerrorWorks guys used to have their airsoft shoot 'em up games going, which was a ton of fun when they were running around the building with their airsoft guns the same night as the Ohio Democratic Party annual banquet at which Joe Biden was coming to speak back when he was vice president. Secret Service had a field day with a bunch of dudes running around the building with airsoft guns.
That sounds like a poot.
I was there. I remember that.
That was one of the most unintentionally entertaining Origins of all time. Because the same day they were doing this, the same day as the costume contest. So you had all the dignitaries and grand poobahs walking around in their tuxedos and ball gowns. And you had the costume contest folks wandering around the building as well. So it was quite the contrast in styles.
That's hilarious. So one year I was one of the people who helped to run a convention that I don't even actually remember the name of, but it was in Lorain County. If anybody's from up there, this was like a Hilton or someplace like that, right next to a Midway Mall. And it's a small event, right? I think we drew like 100 or 150 people or something like that. My probably was less than that. It was probably more like 80. And we shared the hotel with another group as well, the Nation of Islam.
Oh, boy.
Which, yeah, that was an interesting experience. These extremely well-dressed looking ladies and gentlemen walking around. And then you got all these gamer slobs in the next room over.
Yeah.
You know, at any given time, I'm not talking about the rest of the convention center complex, which is also massive, but even just that Hyatt could easily eat 10 events the size of Buckeye Game Fest. Right. Oh, yeah. One year there was a convention of dentists there with us, for example. It was interesting. Those were some really unfun, joyless people to deal with. But we are right across from the food court. Now, I don't know for sure if this is still where this happens at Origins, but for anybody who's been to Origins, this is like the ground floor of the Hyatt where the LARPs used to happen. I don't know if they're still down there or not. I haven't been to a LARP at Origins in like 15 years.
I have no idea. In terms of trying to arrange those events for you at the conventions, if there's public signups, great. If there's not, that gets a lot harder because you're sort of dependent on some other form of communication for trying to arrange those games. And Gary, you mentioned sort of for Compass, it's just people saying, hey, I'm Gary. I'm willing to play these three games. Who else wants to get together and play? And so you're sort of playing your own schedule Tetris to kind of fit it all together.
Yeah.
For Winterfest, like you guys are.
Can you imagine that system at Origins? Holy cow, what a fiasco that would be.
Well, not for the Wargamers because there's only 50 of us there anyway. But I kid. Like we're up to a couple.
And we all know each other. Or straight. Yeah. We've got everything figured out. We already got everything figured out.
This is semi-true. For Winterfest, though, it's really different because, like, the whole point of Winterfest is you're going to show up and you're going to play one game for 10 days. Like, that's
exactly
kind of what you do. So it's not like you have to arrange multiple games in multiple time slots.
This is true.
Sort of, hey, we're going to play Third Winter, and that's what you're doing for 8 days, and you might have a side game going on another table when it's the other guy's turn to move all 642 counters that he's got. But really, I mean, for Winterfest, how often have you ever gone and played like more than three games in any given Winterfest?
Actually, there have been a couple of years where I've played five games, pretty much all sides.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, they did this sort of grand tour of Mark Simonich's Zakban games, and they played like five different ones, something like that, all week. So they didn't have to like relearn very much. So that's a viable way forward. But usually, yeah, the Winterfest tradition is you show up and play one thing all week. Yeah. And maybe you got a side thing set up. And with the exception of Merv and those folks, nobody gets to their side game. No progress gets made. We had a whole GTS thing set up on the side. We didn't touch it. 5 days later, we tore it down.
Yeah. But Winterfest is also built around those monster games.
Very much.
Yeah. Southern Front, which is the smaller minis convention that's here local to me, does email signups ahead of time where I think they've actually got to the point where they now have a Google Docs spreadsheet
That's the pinnacle of organization right there.
For trying to get people's names on. But even once you get there, like they print out all the game sheets and put them all in a binder. And if there's an empty space, you can just go walk up and write your name in the binder for, hey, at 2 o'clock tomorrow, there's an empty slot in this game. So I'm going to go jump into it. You know, they run 10 or 11 tables of mini stuff, 16 hours a day. Now, obviously, there's some changeover in there because you got it with minis. You've got to tear terrain down and set terrain up, which can be a little more time consuming than your normal hex encounter setup seems to be, unless you're doing a monster game. The setup and teardown for the minis thing seems to take a little bit longer, but these guys are pretty good at it because they've been doing it for a while. So I hope that helps folks sort of understand what's happening at conventions as a whole. But before we dive too much into sort of BGF and Origin specific stuff, BGF ends up being a bit of a hybrid in all of this, right? I mean, there's some stuff in tabletop.events. There's a whole lot of stuff that's been arranged outside of tabletop.events.
Especially in the war room, but also in the main gaming area, which is which very much still has like the CABS thing where you just show up and you've already figured it out. Or you rent a game from the library and find people to play it.
Yeah, one of the things that they've done at BGF, and folks that have gone to Origins will recognize this from the boardroom, because it's the same people organizing both.
Yes.
You got the giant traffic cones that they'll put on the tables, and so you'll like hang a box top off the traffic cone. So if you see the traffic cone, that's a game looking for players, and you walk over there and you see the box top hanging off of that, that's the game they're looking to get players for.
Yeah.
And if they get enough people sit down to play, they sit down and play, and that's what they aim for. For BGF, Gary, what is it that you've got organized for this year?
I mean, I'm not like officially anything there, but except to talk about it a lot. So we off the top of my head, I'll be there and you'll be there, although I'll be there more. I will be playing in a glorious Great Battles of the American Civil War, Stones River game. And you'll be doing something that isn't that.
Not ECW, yes.
Right. And you'll be there, I think you said Friday and Saturday, is that right?
Yeah, that's the plan right now. There's an outside chance I could be there for Thursday, but I wouldn't hold my breath for it.
Well, even so. So you're going to be there, I'm going to be there. Herman Luttman's going to be there, he's going to demo some stuff. Ryan Heilman's going to be there. I don't know if he's going to be demoing additional stuff other than the stuff that Herman is already demoing. David Thompson is there. I'm sure he will have 17 different game designs that are in development somewhere in the pipeline.
So Dave actually put his into tabletop.events. So you can see two play tests, one for Night Witches and one for Great Battles of World War II. Those are both NTT.
So other than that, the guys, Aid Grant and Alexander will be there, and they've got some stuff planned. They'll be there like less this year than they were last year, but they're still coming. Because Alexander got a new job. They're going to probably do some coin stuff. I think they said they're going to run Nations and Cannons again, which is a bit bizarre. American Revolution, but with D&D and wizards and shit. They ran it last year, and it sounds like everybody had tons of fun, so there's no reason for them not to do it again this year.
Yeah.
And there's always a chance that a random Traveler game might break out, too. It could happen.
Yeah. The formally scheduled events through TTE, there's 11 of those for the War Room. There'll be 11 games played by noon on Thursday, you know, whether they're officially in the schedule or not. The coin teach and play from Grant Alexander is there. One of Herman's Struggle for Zorn games is there. His new fantasy war game is in there. David's actually got three playtests in there. He's got Night Witches, the Irregulars, Great Battles of World War II. But like Tim Densham and Catastrophe Games are going to be there with a bunch of things both published and not yet published.
That's
and,
who I was forgetting too.
Yeah,
sorry, Tim.
Throw stuff on the table between him and Chris, and I think Aiden's going to be there. They're just going to throw stuff on tables and play games. But like Russ from Cardboard Conflicts and Bill Simone and a couple other folks, Wes Crawford's going to be there. These guys all have some games lined up ahead of time where they've just been in touch with friends that live in different towns. They're all meeting at BGF and going to sit down and play a bunch of stuff. But that's friends that kind of arrange things ahead of time. And I'm sure they're happy to have some strangers sit around and just watch. But I don't know, you know, how many empty seats are at those tables for people to sit down and play.
So I can vouch for our Dead of Winter game, which is full. We might be able to fit one more depending on how that breaks out, but we've got five already, and we feel like that's a very good number for this particular battle. Beyond that, you've got a team coin game happening as well, right?
Yeah, that one's on Thursday afternoon, and right now it is on the schedule.
So I guess you better be there on Thursday then.
Well, it says Thursday. I'm not sure that was what it was supposed to be. I think it was supposed to be Saturday.
Too bad.
I looked at the schedule, and it's saying Thursday, May 2nd at 1, and I'm not sure that's right. So I might have.
Well, that's the time people are going to have signed up for it, because that's what's on the schedule.
Well, you're saying people like it's more than one. Right now it's person singular, so I might have to contact Kristen and get this fixed. We're fixing things in real time, folks.
Unlike Gamma.
Yeah, well, they fix them in past time. So
in exponential time, you mean? Yeah,
setting BGF aside for a moment.
These problems, Gamma's problems, are not solvable in polynomial time. I'm sorry, Brent.
Yeah, no kidding.
The 12th season of Mentions and Dispatches is made possible by all of our Patreon supporters who pledged at the top level. The Armchair Dragoons would like to thank Michael Sunborg, Fred and his dog, Chet Bell, Hellcat 6, Patrick Geraghty, Stagger Wing, Kevin Bertram, Mike Quigley, Martok, and Joseph Knoll for their support of the Regiment of Strategy Gaming, which helps us bring you the best strategy gaming articles, events, and this podcast. You can join us as a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/armchairdragoons.
Setting aside BGF for a moment, rolling forward to Origins, because then Lee actually has a bunch of stuff to talk about because he's going to be there for it.
I'll be there for more of it.
So Lee, was it your idea or Gary's idea to do Brazen Chariots this year?
We hashed around trying to figure out what to do. Something themed to 1944, because that was 80 years ago, and we couldn't agree on anything. And we fell back on, well, we really like BCS. Well, we end up praising Chariots yet. Well, it's not 1944, but we agreed on that.
It'll work.
Yeah.
And, well, we ended up, we've got the Normandy 44 games, which we kind of targeted. And then we picked BCS as an imprint system, right? Even though as soon as we made the decision that we were going to do Brazen Chariots sold out. But at least the system's alive and you could go order BCS games from MMP right now, right? I guess last year we did Third World War, but, you know, when we did Europa, it's like, hey, this thing's been out of print for 30 years. It was barely in print when it was in print.
Yeah, well, Europa was a bit of a proof of concept that seemed to work. And so we've continued that over the last 2 years following that first Europa experiment. And that is the idea of the running game. It's for a lot of games, you sit down, you play the scenario. When you're done, we pack the game up because we need the table for something else, or we reset it back to what that scenario was because we're using a specific scenario designed for conventions or multiplayer or demo purposes or whatever. What Gary and Lee are doing is they set up the game and it stays in place, and we've got 4 hour sessions of the game set up, but they don't reset the game in between sessions. You pick up where the previous one left off,
or keep playing if you want. That's cool by us.
Or keep playing if you want. If you're still signed up to stay there, no problem. But you guys are teaching the rules. It's not like you have to know the rules to sit down and play. You're going to teach as you go, so we can have novices wander in and surprisingly, we actually got a few for Europa, which was kind of cool.
Yeah. and we're prepared. We, you know, Lee and I are both prepared for that in terms of, yes, we're ready to handle it if people want to, you know, come up and need the game taught to them. But we also just played the absolute shit out of last Blitzkrieg. So we are pretty well conversant and comfortable with BCS as a game system at this time.
Yeah. Yes. Yep. So it's one of those things where if you would like to be able to play a larger monster game over multiple sessions, register for multiple sessions, no problem. If you just want a taste of BCS without having to commit to the full weekend, play 1 4-hour session, call it good, and buy the guys a beer afterwards and go on your merry way and go do something else.
Scotch, but yes, exactly. Lee and I are both Scotch aficionados, so.
Yes, we are.
For this year at Origins, we've actually significantly increased the size of our war game area from where we've been the last couple of years. The last few years, we had a 10 by 20 space. We were 10 wide by 20 deep, which we were able to fit about 7 tables into by configuring them a particular way. And we kind of liked our table configuration, so we repeated it there for a couple of years, which worked out well. That gives us the ability to put a couple of monster games up like Gary and Lee and just leave those set up. It gives us a couple of bigger tables where we can have some things go up and down, or if we need to split across multiple tables for a double blind game, we've got the ability to do that. And then we've got a bunch of smaller ones that we can use for a lot of the smaller war games that we've got. This year, we are...
And don't worry, folks, if we run out of tables, we'll just steal more.
That's not... You're not supposed to say that out loud.
That never happened. That never... I deny everything. There is no photographic proof.
So this year,
we cut it out and post if you want to.
This year, we've doubled our footprint from what we've had the past couple of years. So we've actually got 4 tables at 5x8, 3 of which are having stuff go up and stay on them for the entire weekend. Your guys' Brazen Chariots game, the Pico Armor Panzer Blitz game is back. So you're going to be able to play Panzer Blitz with 3mm minis.
That's pretty cool, too. I don't touch minis because, hives. But that's a pretty cool game, actually. It's very, very, it's neat, right? It's Panzer Blitz. You got to love Panzer Blitz.
Yeah, but adapt, instead of moving counters around, you've got your little square piece of cardboard's got 3mm minis on it.
Yes, it's neat.
It is. We've also got a 5x8 table that is a Napoleonic minis game this year. We've got Quatre Bras going to be set up. They're using the Charge rule set, and they're going to run 6 iterations of Quatre Bras over the course of the weekend.
I do not understand any of the ancient Sumerian that you have just spoken.
The Battle of Quatre Bras?
No, this miniatures part.
Oh, Yeah.
Well, and the Charge, which I'm like, I have no idea what that is.
I've never played the Charge rules. I'm assuming folks interested in minis would at least have an inkling of what it is.
I assume that you are absolutely right.
But again, we plan our program such that we are prepared to teach any of the rule sets and do not expect proficiency ahead of time. That's kind of the point of what we're doing. We do have the other big 5x8 table is going to be taken over by the guys from 10K Games that Gary has dragged into this. And they've got two different games. They're doing three sessions each. They're both World War II East Front. One of them is the game system is called the Symphony of Destruction rules.
I'm pretty sure it's the same game, actually, that they just may have two different scenarios or setups. Scenarios.
So yeah. There's the dash to Daugavpils. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that.
Oh, all war gamers mispronounce it. Don't worry. We call it dog pills.
Or sure. Dark City.
There you go.
The shove to Shavli. I'm pretty sure I'm getting Shavli right there. But beyond that, so we've got both Catastrophe Games and Fort Circle Games are going to be working out of our space. They don't have exhibit hall booths, but they've got some table space with us for their games. And so with Fort Circle Games, we've got some halls of Montezuma, some Shores of Tripoli, some Votes for Women, which are all in print. Halls of Montezuma will be in print and will be on hand by then. Kevin's also got a couple of other games they're bringing along. They are going to have the Hunt for Blackbeard game, which is the one that Volko is publishing with them. And they're going to have some of the Shakespeare game that he's doing. And then there's something else they've got in there that because my cut and paste utterly failed in the chat here. Is it
Night Witches?
They are going to have Night Witches, but David's actually coming to town to do that one. So both of the Night Witches games are on the same day because that's the only day David's only going to be there one day this year.
Well, that sucks.
So that might be the one that I'm thinking of there.
But we will get to hang out with David at Buckeye Game Fest, though, which will be great.
Yes. Which will be awesome. The guys from Catastrophe Games will have the new Crisis in Korea game there with them. Solder City, which uses the Zermatt rules in an urban environment. They'll have for that. They've got both Campaign Bagration and Campaign Fall Blau will be there, and True Command. And I'm sure I'm missing something in there somewhere.
I played True Command last year when Tim was demoing it. It's pretty neat.
Yeah, that's the one where the variable leaders have different effects that they can use to add or subtract different abilities for the units that you've got on the field there. We mentioned Normandy 44, so we've got four iterations of Normandy 44. So if you want to come sit down and learn the Zachmann system, we can do that. And we're doing Normandy 44 because it's the 80th anniversary of D-Day. We are going to have four iterations of Nevsky. So we've got some Levy and Campaign stuff that's going to hit the table. Also from GMT, we've got Space Empires 4X. Twilight Struggle, Red Sea. We've got Empire of the Sun. So we've got a bunch of different stuff from GMT that we're doing. This year, I am only doing one event at Origins this year, and that is I'm doing the Team Coin game because I'm the only guy that does those. So we are going to do one of those. Going back through the list here. We did Gary talk to Doc, and so Doc is going to join us for a couple of games. Well, maybe not Doc himself, but somebody from Decision Games is joining us for an iteration of Battles for the Ardennes, and we're also doing a Campaigns in Europe.
Which will be released in World War Magazine right around that time. The first issue or two ought to be out by then.
Okay. We did try to talk you guys into doing Axis Empires for the big monster game. Y'all weren't interested.
Well, the only the problem is I'd be teaching it to everybody, including everybody that's helping run it. So it was a pragmatic choice. I'd be totally up for doing that, and I think Doc would have been delighted, but we just pick something different. Maybe we'll do Axis Empires next year. I think that's completely plausible.
All right. You heard it here first, guys.
So, I mean, I'm not promising anything, right? But I'd say, hey, yeah, I'd throw that in the list of things that we could do.
Yep. Also on the, because, we haven't listed enough games for folks to come jump into. And looking at the list of stuff, I missed a couple from Catastrophe.
You're also failing to mention that like a bunch of this stuff's being run by the designers.
Yes. Well, I was getting there. So Aaron Armor, we have three iterations of Aaron Armor. Bruce is supposed to be coming to town to run this one. So Bruce Maxwell is going to join us for Aaron Armor. And then Fred Schwartz is also going to be there.
And if you haven't bought Aaron Armor yet, you talk to Bruce for 5 minutes and you'll be handing him your cash.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
You'll be buying two. Fred was the developer on Aaron Armor. So we got both of the head brains behind Aaron Armor going to be there. And then they're also, they tacked on an iteration of NATO Cold War Goes Hot as well. So Bruce, both of his big compass releases.
And I can vouch for NATO Cold War Goes Hot. It's and Lee can too, for that matter. Yeah. It's terrific.
Keith Tracton and I got our ass kicked by Bruce playing it at Fall Assembly.
Well, I would hope so, for Christ's sake.
I'm going back through the list here. We do have a couple of iterations of We Are Coming Nineveh. The Song for War guys are back. Gary, you'll be interested to know, for the Song for War stuff, they've actually split the original game into two different games. They've got
I saw that in
Italy as separate games this time around.
Yeah.
We are going to do two iterations of the 1824 Kriegsspiel. We are going to put the blinders and we're going to put the study carols up around a bunch of the tables, and we're going to put a whole bunch of people at tables where they can only see their own map and what the umpire tells them is there. But we're going to run a full up Kriegsspiel.
Anybody that is into war games that has not done this needs to do this. You don't have to do it twice, but you need to do this. It will be extremely illuminating. Let me put it that way.
Yeah. And we've got three of our command post exercises. And this year we've brought back the CPX boot camp also, where they're going to do kind of a smaller, very specific task focused kind of workshop leading into those CPXs as well. So you can learn about just recon planning, for instance. And there'll be a little bit of a mini scenario played as a part of it. We're going to focus on just some particular pieces of that. So if the full 4 hour and change CPX doesn't fit into your schedule, you can still get a bit of the experience in like a 2 hour window also.
Yeah, I got to tell you, Brant, everything that I said about the Kriegsspiel applies to the command post exercises, too. It'll be very illuminating. You should definitely do it. But you're just hearing your pitch right now on the CPX boot camps when you said workshop and you promised information on the latest deliverables and man, that made me think of work. I almost busted out laughing. I'm like, man, I'm leaving the area when you guys are doing this, or I'm going to doze off.
Now, the intent behind those workshops is we're isolating one part.
You're doing it again with the workshops. Stop with the workshops. You call them action sessions.
Sure.
Make them exciting. You got to punch this up, Brant. You're not selling. Calling it a workshop, I ain't selling it at all. It sounds there's the word work appears in workshop. Okay, it sounds like The Office. I don't want to do this on my vacation.
Is boot camp any better?
But it is better. Yes, okay. There's at least the idea of some PT ahead of you for boot camp.
Connotation there. So yeah. the idea in the boot camps, because that's actually what they're called if you look them up on the schedule.
Yes, I know.
But the idea behind those is to just take one part of the bigger planning process and focus on just that one thing so that we can fit it in that 2 hour window with a little bit of a war game, demonstrating those principles that we talk about. So that's the idea behind it. Gary, I know you've played in one of the CPX. Lee, have
you? Oh, it's great. Yeah, totally. You should totally do it. Brent, I'm only making fun of you here. You understand that.
No, I get it. I was asking Lee if he's ever had a chance to play in one of them.
I've recommended to Lee that he do so if he hasn't already. I think you did 1 year, didn't you?
I don't think I have. I played in something similar to it at a earlier con years and years ago. I don't remember what it was, but it was
NSDM is not wildly it's pretty wildly dissimilar, to be honest about it. Yeah. It looks superficially similar. It's really not. That's also great. People should do that too.
Yeah, except we don't plan the NSDM stuff, so I have no idea.
Yeah, we got nothing to do with that. I have no idea. It's happening somewhere. That's all I know.
Yeah. Closest I come to that is running double blind flat top.
Yeah,
which is amazing. By the way,
you know, we could do that 1 year because we could split them out and do that.
We could. We'd have to talk about how to do that. But yeah, we could totally do that.
We've run double blind Second World War at sea a couple of times.
I got to kidnap John Madison and get that revised map from him first, though.
There we go.
Sure.
Yeah, that one that's pretty and not done in Sharpie like the originals.
Not the original one.
Yeah.
So, that laundry list of stuff that we just listed for Origins is actually just the game sessions. If you go into tabletop.events right now and you search for things from Armchair Dragoons, what you will find are the 30-odd events that we are sponsoring in the War College, which are not game sessions. Those are all historical talks or designer panels or something that we've brought back this year that hasn't been at Origins for at least 12 or 13 years, maybe more. And that is, we've got a bunch of the Wargame publishers going to get up and do a bit of a state of the company talk and Q&A with the audience. So if you're interested in hearing kind of the state of the company from any combination of Fort Circle, Dietz Foundation, Catastrophe Games, Decision Games, Academy Games, I think we've got Collins Epic in there. I'd have to go back and double check. And we've got Jason Carr going to be there from GMT. So we're doing a GMT Games talk also. So you can get sort of a state of GMT with Jason doing that talk and have an opportunity for some Q&A with that as well. So this is something that we haven't done at Origins in a long time and are bringing back, the idea that you've got some direct interaction with the company. So I'm hoping those go well.
I got to tell you, the you know, between those sessions and the rest of the War College slate and the selection of events that you've just spent the last half hour reading off, this is a really great wargaming track this year.
I'm hoping that enough other people agree with that sentiment that they all show up and come play games with us.
Yeah.
So,
well, you're going to have excellent photogenic stuff on the corners with us and the Pico Armor people and the other miniatures, thing from, you know, whatever that thing's called.
On one of the corners, though.
Oh, that's actually a great idea. He gets corner number four, I guess.
We have to have Bruce on a corner just to flag
people around
and talk them into buying.
Oh, yeah. It's like you know, that those swirly wheels with the spiral on them that the hypnotists on the old Batman show used to use to hypnotize. That's like, you look at Bruce and it's like, I must go and spend money because this game sounds freaking awesome.
Yes, Bruce is a human version of that. He absolutely is. So the designer panels, because we've got enough of them here, we actually had enough designers, we had to split it into two panels. So I don't remember exactly who's on which panel, but we have...
There's so much to keep track of, seriously.
Because there are a bunch of them, but we have some combination...
It is written down somewhere, folks. He'll figure it out.
It is. You can go look up the panels on tabletop.events. We have Jason Matthews and Ananda Gupta from Twilight Struggle. We've got... Kevin Bertram, Tim Densham, Jim Werbeneth, Ian Brown, who did the Maneuver Warfare card game, which we have five of, going to be doing the Maneuver Warfare game. We've got Tori is on one of the panels. I know I'm missing some people because there's, again, multiple panels with at least four people each. We do have Bruce is giving a talk on kind of not necessarily a situation update, but sort of an overview of the conflict in Ukraine, that the current ongoing conflict that Bruce is going to give a talk on. Jim Werbeneth is going to give several different historical talks, one on Guilford Courthouse. I think he's doing the Inchon talk about the Inchon invasion. He's got one on U.S.-French relationships during World War II and sort of the evolution of those, because, you know, the French waved the white flag at one point. So there's going to be some interesting historical stuff we're going to cover. Fred's doing
well. They didn't want to deal with Churchill, that gangster, as Charles de Gaulle famously called him.
Sure. Fred's doing one on tank destroyers in World War II. So we've got a pretty wide slate of different things that we're talking about. We are going to be talking about aircraft carriers in space. So that's going to be a fun one. We've got Chris coming to town to do that. David Thompson's on one of the designer panels, whichever one's on Saturday, because that's the only day he's going to be there. So yeah, there's anybody that says there's no wargaming at Origins is full of shit.
Well, they've been full of shit for several years, to be fair.
So Lee, if you weren't going to be chained to the to the Brazen Chariots table, any of those particularly jump out at you as, oh my God, I would totally want to go do that?
Well, yes. Symphony of Destruction, I was in their first playtest. I would be interested to see what the second playtest will look like. Normandy 44, I'm always up for that. What else was I seeing? Votes for Women had my attention a bit last year. I was, because we were right next to them across the section.
As small as our booth was last year, we were right next to everything.
But yes. Cold War Goes Hot is always a fun one. I read and was interested in the Night Witches role-playing game, so I'd be curious to see what this game is.
So this one is not the role-playing game.
Right. No. Hilariously, though, David and or Liz did a podcast with Jason Morningstar, who is the designer of the Night Witches role-playing game.
Yeah, that would have been Liz. Liz talked to him. They both cover the same thing, right? They both cover that Soviet Air Force unit with the women pilots. I played an early playtest demo copy of it last year at BGF. And it's, you are a pilot working your way through, you know, some particular mission bombing run, across the East Front, and what happens is you're drawing counters that are filling in the area that you're flying over as you fly over it. And so as you cross different hexes, you will start to fill in what's around you, and you are drawing from a bag whose mix, the difficulty changes by how much of what you put in the bag. So that's how you make the scenarios harder or easier. And there will be mixtures of anti-aircraft guns, which will try to shoot you down, searchlights, which make it easier for them to try to shoot you down. In some cases, there are actual targets that you're trying to hit in there. So the map unfolds as you fly across it, because you don't know what's there yet until you start flying. And then you have to manage your aircraft as you do that. You've got a certain amount of ammo you can use, certain amount of fuel you can use. You can dump fuel to try and be more maneuverable, or you can try and fly faster, which burns some fuel. So it's a pretty nifty, it almost has a bit of an arcade game feel to it. But it is very much Hex Encounter, trying to survive your bombing run sort of game. It is quite fun. It plays quick, and it can play solo or co-op, because you can have two of you playing side by side on the same map. Or you can just play solo and just, you know, depending on what mix you put in the bag that you pull from as you fill in the map while you fly over it, you add more anti-aircraft guns. It's harder to get across the map, that kind of thing. So pretty nifty.
I observed that game. It's pretty neat.
Definitely sounds interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Small footprint, plays quick, but a satisfying experience, because you have actual decisions to make. You're not just sort of a dice chucker for an AI like some solo games can feel.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool with that one. I really wish we were going to have David for multiple days. Unfortunately, it's just not going to work out this year. Outside of the wargaming area, Gary, is there a particular something at Origins that's, oh my God, I got to do that?
The dealer's room calls to me, but as it does every year, and I'll no doubt spend significant amounts of time in there. I sometimes try to get into a traveler event, but the only like day I have to do that is Wednesday night. So that's unlikely. It has happened before, and I might try to make it happen this year, but it, you know, best of luck to me on that. Other than that, you know, I'm more or less resigned at this point to spending most of my convention in the wargaming area. I'd be curious to see We Are Coming Nineveh, actually.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind trying that if you know, if that is turns out to be a thing that can be done. Well, I don't know.
I know, actually, because.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I could look at the schedule. I'm aware I could look at the schedule, but the fact is I won't check the schedule for this until I am actually physically in the building. So, yes.
Well, the We Are Coming Nineveh, it's a fun game. Played it, you know, a couple of times. There's video of Peter Robbins and I screwing it up on YouTube.
Oh, there you go. I think I remember that video. Wasn't that at Gamma Expo?
No. Peter and I were playing it at Gamers Armory here in town, and we were in the midst of setup when we realized that we'd stickered a couple of the blocks wrong. We put the wrong thing on the wrong color block. And so as we are live streaming the game, we're busy fixing stickers on blocks. So that was kind of entertaining. But no, it's a fun game. The block aspect, obviously you've got the fog of war, but there are a bunch of blocks in the game that are non-combat blocks. And so the way they are worked in there, there's some blocks that are, they just, the term in the rule book is rumors, right? It's sort of intel that there's something over there, which is why that block is now on the map. But it turns out to not actually be a thing. So that's how they sort of work in some of the fog of war and intel collection that you need as a part of all this. So it's there's some neat little mechanics like that. There are tracks that you keep up with the level of infrastructure damage, the level of civilian casualties. So as those things start to mount, that can become a larger problem for one side or the other in the overall scoring of the scenario. So you do have to be a little careful how much damage you're doing as you're plowing across the city. You can't just go in, bomb everything. So it's a pretty nifty system, and particularly from first time designers, it's remarkable how well done it is.
I also would love, there is absolutely zero chance of this occurring, but I would love to get in on Space Empires 4X. That's a great game. On the other hand, you know, it's not like we can't play that at home. So there's that. Neither I nor anybody I know has a copy of We Are Coming Nineveh, unless you do, Brant. Sounds like you might.
I do, actually.
There you go. Bring it to Origins.
Yeah, well, I may not need to, but it's also not like I could just bring it over to your place on a Friday afternoon for a game.
Well, that's true, yeah.
Even though we're like 9 hours apart, but
something like that.
Yeah, but it is definitely a fun game and one worth folks seeking out to enjoy. So, Lee, outside of the wargaming area, anything in particular at Origins? The Smithy Awards, I think, are your normal thing, right?
Smithy Awards, which is always Friday night. That's my wife and I's anniversary date. Yes, we are strange. I usually slip out for at least one round of role-playing. Especially most years, one of my friends is still running Twilight 2000. For a while, I would run games with him until you guys roped me into stuff. I will run a plug that he tells me he is running four slots of good old Twilight 2000, first edition.
I was about to ask.
Yes.
Since I just actually picked up Twilight 2000 second edition, 2.0 is the one I got.
The free
league. Not that. No. I'm talking the GDW version. I've had the free league one for a while. It's pretty. But other than that, I would rather play the game, any of the GDW versions personally, but that's just me.
Yeah.
Roman runs a game. He's setting up a whole bunch of miniatures this year, from what I hear. And no matter what scenario is, he says he's running, it's always Custer's last stand. my point of pride is he's only killed my character once.
Well, yeah, anybody can go hide in the truck and not get killed.
Actually, the time I got killed was the guy that did try to hide in the truck.
They found you.
Yes.
Yeah. So for folks that are interested in coming to Origins, look, there's more than enough wargaming stuff to do. More importantly, the oil spot of wargaming in the gaming hall continues to expand. Our footprint continues to grow. So if you are a wargamer who is interested in coming to Origins or have been on the fence about it, there is definitely a home base for you at Origins. There's a place of other like-minded wargamers for you to come hang out and kind of feel at home and have somewhere to come play. And you can sign up for a whole bunch of stuff ahead of time, or you can sign up for just like one thing each day and the rest of the time just kind of hang around and wait and see if there's an empty spot in a game you can jump into. We do have some space in the schedule, some holes in the schedule for some pickup games. So I know we'll probably get some random stuff thrown on the table. Ian has threatened to put Littoral Commander on the table a couple of different times. So we'll see if that actually happens.
Man, if you need a break from wargaming, there's every other kind of game is represented at Origins in spades, except for digital games. If you want to play video games, stay at home and play World of Warcraft, because you won't have a great time at Origins. Other than that, you'll have a great time.
Interestingly,
the guys are there.
Yeah. That's true, but I couldn't do that for hours a day.
you said, you know, there's plenty of games in spades. Honestly, I don't know that I've ever seen a spades game break out at Origins.
I don't know about that, but there is a poker tournament.
Yes. And apparently the puzzle tournament is coming back this year.
Oh, yay.
Yeah, I know.
There was a bridge tournament one year, I think.
With a minimum age requirement. You must be this old to participate in this bridge game with your parents.
Either you have a walker or you are not allowed in the game.
Yeah.
That's sort of the rule there. So
they don't ask for ID when you walk in the door. They ask to see your genital.
Any interest at all in the costume contest?
No.
Just curious.
You will see, especially on Saturday, you'll see a decent number of cosplay people, you know, people in cosplay, whatever it's called, right? The people dressed up in weird outfits. You'll see a decent number of those people, but it's not like an incredibly cosplay heavy convention either.
No, so. It has been in years past. It hasn't been so much lately. There's always at least two or three costumes each year that you kind of stop and go, holy crap, that's impressive.
Oh, sure. And you'll costume vendors too. There's multiple cosplay vendors in that huge exhibit hall. It's an enormous vendor hall, right?
There normally are. Last year, for some reason, there were zero, and it was the one year my daughter wanted to pick up a particular costume, and there were all sorts of like Renaissance clothing folks, but nobody actually doing costumes. And,
okay, I see what you mean. Yeah, no, that's probably correct.
That was very frustrating because there was no way I was letting her get stuff from the, what is it, the
slutty mermaid? Yeah, go figure.
Yeah. Not happening. There was one place that was basically selling sort of cheesecloth that was sewn into clothing
patterns. This isn't clothing.
And then there was the one place that actually had some very nice Victorian cut corset dresses. And they were very well made. They're all handmade. They're all gorgeous. Lots of very interesting fabrics. Oh, my God. Those things were expensive. There went my game budget for last year. You want to know why I left Origins last year with two games? That was why. My daughter's very, very nice Alice in Wonderland Victorian corset dress is why I bought two games last year. So the rest of it she was wearing. So
I bought two games before the dealer's room opened, Brant.
You know, look, the dealer's room is not as war game heavy as I would like it to be. Part of that is the long running thing of the dealers saying, you know, hey, look, there's no war gamers there for us to sell to. And the war gamers saying, hey, we don't want to show up because there's no dealers there for us to buy from. We've now got enough events that we can bring war gamers back. And I think the exhibitors are starting to see that they've got an event team that can help support the product they're trying to sell. So I'm hoping that some of the GMT is there because they're represented by Enterprise. Can we get Bill to show up from Compass? Be nice. I don't know. Decision's already there. Academy's already there. Can we get Worthington to show up? Can we get Legion to show up? Can we get Revolution to show up, right? Can we get some of these mid-range guys to come show up knowing that they've got some friendly ground to trod on and a friendly audience to work with? No, it's not going to be 50% of the convention like it was 35, 40 years ago. But I think there's probably enough of a critical mass of us war gamers that they've got something to work with there. Let's hope we can get those guys to show up some more.
So, agreed.
Let's hope.
Yeah. Now we need is, you know, like an actual committee. This thing's getting big enough that we need a committee to help start organizing the wargaming stuff.
You got to have focus group. You got to call it a focus group and focus on deliverables and metrics.
No, what I want is help, right? That's what I want. I want some help.
That's what I was thinking when you were reading all these events. I was like, fuck. No wonder. How does he have any hair left at all?
Yeah, the data entry for 145 events. That's a lot.
I'd have been pulling my own face. I mean, I'm you know, with the CSRs, it's probably not entirely dissimilar. Yeah. But yeah, no, it's for a frustratingly heavy workload. Clearly,
a different level of headache. But yes, still.
But I got to deal with Dan, so I'm just saying. Clearly, yeah. That one of us is more challenged than the other.
Yeah, well, and that's Dan.
Right, obviously. He's got to put up with me.
Is this the real reason I'm on this podcast?
That Dan couldn't make it? No, Dan was not invited. Dan doesn't go to conventions.
I'm not going to get roped into another job here.
Exactly.
Maybe.
I think we both need to volunteer Todd for this important task, actually.
Okay.
We're vitally needed elsewhere, obviously.
Of course.
Yeah. But no, look, folks that are, again, interested in some war gaming, we've got plenty. And I'll tell you, I was crunching some numbers, and this will kind of be my last thought on Origins because we're already running a little long. A little bit. I was crunching some numbers on things the other day. Assuming Origins crosses the 17,000 attendee threshold, which I don't think is unrealistic this year.
And no, that's possible.
Pre-COVID numbers, not the highest of their pre-COVID numbers, but it's not unrealistic that we hit 17,000 this year at Origins, right? So 1% of that is still, if 1% of the people in the building are wargamers, you've got 170 wargamers running around there. How many other wargame conventions out there are pulling in 170 wargamers? So when we see caps at 100, how many does Compass bring in there?
They've probably maybe 150, something like that.
CSW Expo, 140, 150.
250 to 350. Something like that. Yeah.
Okay. So we won't catch CSW. If we're sticking with the 1% metric, you got 1% of those 17,000 attendees are actual wargamers. You got 170 wargamers in the door, and 1% may be low. If it's 2%, we've now got 340 wargamers in the door. And that's bigger than just about any other wargame convention you're going to have out there.
That's true.
Now, Origins can be a headache. I am not going to sugarcoat that. And Jason Matthews, who was on the board at Gamma, will even tell you that there's plenty of stuff Gamma screws
up. We think we're frustrated with Gamma. Can you imagine the bullshit that Jason has to deal with?
Jason is more than happy to admit that there's plenty of stuff they do in a very unserious fashion. But still, we've assuming 2% of that attendance is Wargamers, we've now got 340 Wargamers in the door. Gamma can be a headache to deal with. However, it may end up being a headache worth dealing with for two reasons. One, at that point, Gamma can't ignore you anymore because you're there. But you are there to help support a growing and continuing to expand wargaming population at Origins. And look, it's not like we're only catering to the wargamers. We will grab anybody walking by the aisle and rope them into a game wherever we possibly can. And part of what we're doing is not just giving wargamers somewhere to call home, but trying to grow more wargamers. And it's something that we've been working on for years. And the fact that we have now expanded our footprint from a 15 by 15 ish event space that very first year that we started this program back in 2014, all the way up to the fact that we're in a 40 by 40 space now. I mean, I think that says something to how much space we can take up and legitimately fill with wargaming events. I would like to see some more of the companies show up and play. I'd love to get more players show up. So,
well, you know, last year you had a really high sell rate on the available slots. So across the entire slate of wargaming events, yeah. I'd be a little surprised if you didn't do something similar this year, where you sell well above the convention average in terms of number of slots. And by sell, like, most events, including, I think, everything that we're doing, Brant, you don't have to pay separately for anymore. So correct. By sell, we just mean bully people into sitting down and playing.
Actually show up on the attendance sheet, yes.
Yeah, you do want to sign up for events, but if you can. But you can also just show up, and yeah. Chances signing are real real good. We'll figure something out you can do.
Yeah, signing up guarantees your seat for that event at that time. But there's plenty of opportunities for us to fit walk-ins into games. Because we will frequently, like your guys' games, we'll set them for six players to sign up, but you guys can absorb another two and make them eight players if you need to, as a for instance.
We could be reasonably flexible. BCS naturally lends itself to team play.
Yeah. Last year was the second highest number of individual events that we ran. I think it was 2018. We had a couple more events than we did last year. But this past year was the highest total attendance that we had, not just percentage of seats, but raw numbers. It was the highest total attendance of players that we've had since we started this program back in 2014.
Business is booming.
Yeah. You know, the fact that we're doubling the floor space and we're going from 60 odd events to over 100, I think we're going to beat the player count from last year.
My Jesus, I think so. Yeah.
If we don't, it will be a massive disappointment.
Well, also, you've got a secret weapon, Bruce Maxwell. Yes. So, and you're doing the Kriegspiels again, which, as we've told the story many times, bizarrely attracted a lot of attention from passersby, and that garnered several additional players.
Yes. Yes, we had folks that last time we did this, we did a freebie on Wednesday night that was just sort of a drop-in thing. But we had warned everybody, hey, look, at any minute we could say, all right, we're stopping the scenario, we're restarting and resetting, because we were testing some of the scenario, but we were also helping teach some of the umpires how to do stuff. And so we had some folks walk by and go, what the hell is that? So we'd throw them in for a turn or two on Wednesday. But then on Friday, when we ran the actual event, most of those folks came back to play in the full 4-hour event, which was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It not a conventionally photogenic event. Let's put it that way.
No, everybody looks like they're taking their LSATs in the middle of a game
convention. Yeah, exactly. Again, it looks like work.
Guys, as we wrap all this up, Gary, any parting thoughts on game conventions as a whole, or BGF or Origins in particular?
Looking forward to BGF. It is wet. Is it? It's Tuesday as we're recording this. By a little less than a week from now, I will be at Buckeye Game Fest. So my immediate attention is on that and on refreshing my memory of GBACW. And then after that, you know, we get about a month or close to 2 months, actually, between BGF and Origins. So always look forward to Origins. Like I said before, this will be my like 28th or 27th Origins or something like that. So I've been doing this a long time. Obviously, I have fun every year.
You keep coming back.
I keep coming back. I keep spending money in that damn dealer's room.
Lee,
every year.
Any parting thoughts on all of this?
We have failed to mention Artemis at BGF.
That's true. You could do it at Origins as well if you'd like to pay $15 for 40 minutes or whatever it is. Or you could just show up to BGF and play all friggin' day for free. Yes. It is the Artemis Spaceship Bridge Simulator, and you can Google this. You can actually go buy it on Steam, but at a convention, played live with the touchscreens and the crosstalk, and it's just a fantastic experience. It's a ton of fun. It's a bit exhausting because by the time you're done your like 45 minute slot, you're kind of wrung out, but it's really cool.
Yeah, not last year, but the previous year, so the 2022 Buckeye Game Fest article over at the Dragoons, be linked to this podcast, there is video of the three of us playing in the Artemis Spaceship Bridge Simulator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, it's so much fun. It's a lot of fun. I wouldn't actually want to do it all day because I would have to take a nap between sessions, but it's a lot of fun. So yep. Picture it's the Star Trek bridge with the serial numbers filed off, fighting off Klingons with the serial numbers filed off, yep. And that kind of stuff. It's just it's a blast.
Yep. And if you want to go back to the corporate speak, it's an excellent team building exercise.
That's true too.
I'll make Gary writhe on the floor here.
Yeah, I'm dying here.
Yep.
All right. So all you want to be team builders, Buckeye Game Fest, come play in the Artemis Spaceship Bridge Simulator.
Indeed. So I'll be there somewhere.
I think we'll all be there.
Yeah, I didn't have time to do it last year just because of what we were doing. Just didn't give me that amount of time flexibility. But yeah, we'll try and squeeze it in this time.
Excellent.
Yeah, because we did it several times in 22 and then we didn't do it at all last year.
I didn't do it at all last year.
Yeah, me either. So, all right, folks, we're almost done with season 12 of Mention and Dispatches. It's probably been our longest episode this season so far.
That's because I'm on.
Well, that has something to do with it. We're still going to talk about historical RPGs, and then we're also going to our wrap-up show this season. We're going to take a look at the state of the hobby wargaming world and bring some new voices in, some folks that have not yet appeared on Mention and Dispatches over any of our previous seasons. So we hope you'll come back in a couple of weeks and check that out. Leave you in a little suspense until then. In the meantime, we'll catch up with Gary and Lee both over the summer. We'll be doing some live shows on Gary's channel for sure, on the Dragoons channel as well. So we'll be doing some live hits from both of those conventions and probably a couple other things over the summer. In the meantime, thank you for joining us for Mention and Dispatches, and we'll catch you next time on our next episode.